welcome to In-Game Chat for Saturday, June 15th, 2013. This is Season 7, Episode 19. I'm Scott.
I'm James.
I'm Matt.
I'm Jeremy.
And I'm RJ.
Oh, look at that packed house tonight. If you'd like to get in touch with us, our phone number is 334-272-9228. 334-272-9228. You can find us on Twitter at In-Game Chat, as well as on Facebook. You can email us, everyone, at ingamechat.net. We're streaming the cam feed right now through Ustream, and you can find us there or hit up our Facebook page and watch from there, as well as join the chat room live while we broadcast. E3 has come and gone, and it's time to talk E3. Figure most of you listening to this probably heard enough of the big highlights of what came out of E3. We're going to try and go over some of those and just kind of give some analysis on everything that happened and kind of hit some of the points that may have gone under the radar or you may have missed in all the hype of everything else that was being said as well. And we're going to start off with Microsoft first. They were the first ones up to bat on Monday with their E3 press conference, and we're going to touch on them. Going into that, they had promised us that it was going to be nothing but games, and I think they delivered on that promise with nothing but games. And we weren't sure if we were going to get a price or a release date. We got a release month.
And a price.
And a price.
I was betting against price, actually, and I still think it was a bad move. Mm-hmm. But I was betting against it. I honestly didn't think that they were ready to talk about price. I thought that they knew they had more important things to talk about. The price wasn't necessarily something...
I was surprised that they did it, yeah.
I think a lot of people would have been okay, at least for the first half of that day, had they not announced their price. I do think they delivered on the promise of nothing but games, but...
I don't think it should have been nothing but.
I don't either. I think that there were two problems with what they did. The first of which is they offered... They had things they needed to clarify. Coming out of the 21st of May, the announcement of their system, and the following weeks, where their message was really sort of littered with misinformation, and where a lot of the executives who were trying to talk about individual components of the system or component of the services were at odds with one another. And I think that there were things that Microsoft... Only because they opened the discussion, they owed people... answers on certain things that they had obfuscated. I think they basically gave us too much exposition at their first announcement and too little exposition at E3. And they could have stood to spend just a little bit of that time talking about the system, trying to clarify certain things about the system, maybe not even the big points, you know. I don't want to see them try to walk back DRM on stage or anything, but I feel like they could have...
mentioned it or something.
They could
it's
have
like the pendulum
little,
just swings from one extreme to the other.
Yeah, that is them. But that's fine. Set aside that. Say that you want to talk about that afterwards. I mean, we know that they canceled the roundtable discussion, where I think a lot of this would have come into play. I think a lot of those questions and possibly answers would have happened in the roundtable immediately following their conference, and they canceled that. And they canceled mm-hmm. a lot of one-on-one interviews. But setting all that aside, if you simply look at their presentation for what it was, they offered no exposition, no explanation, and no discussion of any of the games. They really didn't highlight any of the people who were making them necessarily. They dragged Kojima on stage, right? They paid some amount of money for him to come out on stage for minutes and then go away. They had Sam Lake on stage to talk about Quantum Break.
Mm-hmm.
But then they would skip directly from that just into another unannounced trailer with no preamble, no discussion, no nothing. It was just kind of a mess. It had no theme.
No,
it had no progression.
No cohesion.
Yeah, it was incoherent. It wasn't cohesive. It was a bucket of games videos spilled and just landed all over the stage. And that's all it was. And it actually found it kind of confusing and difficult to follow.
Well, it had its moments, exactly like you said. They would reveal something, then they would have something else revealed and would make no mention of it, would not talk about it. Nobody came on stage to talk about it. I mean, seriously, it was as though it never happened to the people on stage. They would give no context for it and give you any idea of what it was. They did that with Killer Instinct. And then later they went back and referenced Killer Instinct when they were showing off the sharing features of their deal with Twitch TV and everything else that they were doing with the Xbox One. But there were you're right, there was no string, there was no like thread to go from point to point to point. And it felt that way watching it too. I remember it was either the first time it happened or after like the first three or four titles that they did. I felt flustered. I felt like this is going too fast. They're speeding through this.
It right. Feel like they were going too fast.
Yeah.
Felt like they were in a huge hurry. And again, I understand. I know that they had an awful lot they wanted to get through, but there just could have been one or two other things that they removed from the conference so that they could spend a little more time talking about real things, talking about good, you know, they needed to try to endear me to their system. They were already at odds with almost everybody who's been using a critical eye to examine what they've said. Everyone is heavily suspicious of what they're doing, and they didn't make any efforts to win me over. They showed an awful lot of games. You know, and there's a lot of subjectivity to deciding whether or not something is any good. I mean, I think they came out fairly well in terms of just title count for exclusive games.
Very true, yeah.
But
they didn't do a good job controlling their message.
No, they have. But I mean, that's the only thing they have been consistent with is how poorly they've managed their own message. So I came out understanding a little bit better about what games would be available on it. Obviously, and this was done by both Sony and Microsoft, they were very unclear about
which titles were exclusives and which were not.
Right, which were timed exclusive.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's fine. I think most of us, most of the enthusiast crowd, recognizes now that it's important when you watch these things to look out for keywords. And if you don't hear them, it is not exclusive.
Right.
That's that simple. So I don't really hold anybody to blame for that. It's simple marketing and messaging, and that's not necessarily a problem, but I just think they did a really, really poor job of helping me to understand, like, you want it to be all about the games. I know that's what you want. You want it so desperately that you are pretending that there isn't anything else to say. But that's just not true. That's just not true. You have to address these things you have not addressed. You cannot ignore them and simply shove games out on stage. And here's the other thing. Context, as always, is the most important thing in the world when we're talking about events like this. 1 year ago, when Ubisoft announced Watch Dogs, no preamble, no real announcement, no exposition, no explanation. But their timing was impeccable. It was perfect. It was at the very end of the conference, and it left everybody wanting. It was that great surprise, that really wonderful mystery, a game you knew nothing about and you were totally jazzed for. So it can be done. Having no context for a game and then announcing it can be done and can be done well, but Microsoft didn't do it well.
And we all know there's an art to doing a trailer, especially a release trailer, and like, you know, to sneak preview something. You want to hook people in without giving away too much. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these trailers that I saw were just, you know, the opposite. You know, a lot of them were, you know, not that good for like hooking me in.
Yeah.
You know, like the Killer Instinct, right off the bat, they told you exactly what it was. And so you're like, oh, well, hey, a new killer. Instead of being like, okay, what is this? It's a fighting game. This looks familiar. I'm not sure. And you're trying to wonder what it is. You just know automatically. And you're like, oh, well, okay, that's what it is. So there is a definite art to, you know, the marketing. And I think...
And there was nothing artistic about Microsoft's presentation.
No.
It seemed like they were off balance, which we all know they actually were. It seemed like they were in a bad way and that they were hard up for figuring out exactly what they wanted to do. I think, if we're being gracious, right, not as members of the press, members of the press seem to have... They seem to have certain weak spots in and around their ego, where if they're not told what they want in the manner that they expect to be told, if they don't have information delivered in the ways that they expect it. They get especially prickly about it, which I can understand. I do understand. I think that they oftentimes, not to get sidetracked too much about the press, I think they forget their job is to be a conduit, not just to be someone who gets their questions answered. So I think that a lot of them were upset for the wrong reasons, that we weren't getting what we wanted out of Microsoft. But if anything, they didn't... I feel like they were trying not to confuse the issue further. I think they were trying to just not talk about it. Announce some games, admit that, yes, we're here, we're doing a lot of these things, we're not going to deny them, we're not going to talk about them either. We're just going to show you some video games that are going to show up on our system. And in any other year, under any other circumstances, I think that would have been enough.
Mm-hmm.
But not this year, not for them.
This is a special year. Because, you know, they're trying to hook us in with, you know, $500 of new system.
Man, it's more, I mean, it's I know it's special year, but I mean, it's such a, I don't necessarily know a chess game, but it is a...
They've got a hole to climb out of.
I'm waiting for him to pull first type of situation. I mean, it's never been where these two guys are going head-to-head like this on a launch for a system. So... Yeah, I mean, they've
the stakes were really, really high, and they were in a very weak bargaining position for emotional response for everyone who tuned in and cared. And I have to imagine that everybody that pays any attention to E3 is, I suppose fits pretty well within the enthusiast bracket. And those guys are important. They're very, very, very important. We can go over the numbers and the fervor a little bit later, but it's pretty clear that those are the people who care about day one systems. Those are the people who care about launch dates, regardless of what the price is.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. I think they didn't win them over. They didn't win any of us. I mean, we were mostly, well, three of us, me and Jeremy and Matt, were all watching it together, watch the stream together. And I think we were all very confused.
I certainly was, yeah.
Was it Microsoft's when they hold out Drake?
No, that was EA.
Oh, that was EA. Okay. I was trying to, because I was drinking a little bit, so some of the events kind of...
Even if you weren't, even if you're stone cold sober, the Microsoft and the EA events actually...
Blended together.
They blended together fairly well, without the help from any kind of illicit substance. They were very, very similar in tone, I think. At least that's how I felt. I don't know how it felt from you, and by all means, please, I would like to hear your perspective actually having been there.
It was very strange to open with Plants vs. Zombies. I mean, you open with that.
Yeah.
For EA, it wasn't a strange feeling in the room, I suppose. I couldn't really get a sense of the way the room felt. I think the room was coming off of what they had just experienced at Microsoft with the price and everything else. In fact, the entire chatter before you walk into EA was nothing but, what did you think of this? What did you think of that with Microsoft? What do you think of the price?
Mm-hmm.
And had you pre-ordered? Because everybody was ready to hit out there and get their pre-order in, mostly through Amazon with everybody that was there at the event. But sitting at EA and opening with Plants vs. Zombies 2 or Garden Warfare it was a strange start.
Yeah.
Maybe it's... And I guess looking back, it's Microsoft ended with Battlefield 4.
And so
EA didn't want to jump into Battlefield 4, which I would think would be their... Here's our go-to game for our big opening thing. But
they wanted to fool the audience in a way with the beginning of that trailer to make it look like it was kind of...
That's right.
Some,
it did have
a
Battlefield theme to it, I suppose. Yeah,
it was a harmless joke.
It was a joke, though. That's what it was. But it just seems strange to kind of open with that. Looking back, though, I'm like, what could they have... They could have opened with, I suppose, the racing title, and I can't remember what else that they had other than the Battlefield 4 thing when they had 64 people up on stage playing the multiplayer live. Well, as live as it can be when you do a stage demo, put it that way. But yeah, so that was strange. And then I can't remember what they moved into from there. What came after the Plants vs. Zombies thing? I have no idea what came after that, but... theirs went by very quick. They only had an hour. Microsoft had 90 minutes plus, I think, a little bit.
And they spent a little bit too much time. I believe Sony did the same thing, and we can talk about them in a minute, but I think, again, having so much that needed to be said about the Xbox One, they spent way too much time trying to make everybody feel really good about the 360.
Yeah, like it was 20 minutes into the conference before they started talking about the One.
Yeah, they started late, so we were trying to keep tabs on exactly like where we were when they started talking about the Xbox One, but they spent a ton of time talking about the 360. And look, I get it. Not everybody is going to go pre-order the thing immediately. Not everybody is going to be day one. Man, this is E3. This is about day one. Everything you're doing here is about day one. This isn't the kind of... There's no need to backstop your support for the 360. There really isn't as much need. Not when you're Microsoft. Not when you have 90 minutes to turn the world around about your new system. Right? You're not making small corrections. You're not looking for a canard here to like manipulate the conversation in any small way. You have got to move mountains emotionally, psychologically, in perception. And they spent 20-something minutes talking about the Xbox 360. Mm-hmm. And then they went into some garbled, disconnected gibberish that was just a bunch of games thrown at each other. And it looked like, just like you said, they were in a hurry. It looked like they were, oh, man, we're already behind time. Let's just get it out there.
Mm-hmm. It really felt to me like they misunderstood their position and what was expected of them. It still felt like they went into this thinking that we're the front runners.
We're Microsoft.
We just need to go out there and show everybody our stuff, and they'll buy it. And I think they misunderstood the bad reaction to their unveiling of the One.
And they thought it was only because they didn't show games.
Because we didn't show games. Okay, well, so all we have to do is just show games, and everything will be fine, and everybody will go buy our system.
Right, it's maniacal oversteering.
Yeah.
You know? They're careening from curb to curb, and they landed somewhere off into the infield in the middle of the grass. They are absolutely out of control knowing what to do. I mean... You can make a lot of arguments about, and again, we've been fascinated by some of the things the system will do objectively. I think that their task switching, their environment switching stuff is cute and fun in an interesting way. I'm inherently suspicious of it because I've never seen anything like this done in a consumer environment. But the build of their system doesn't look right. The hardware is... by every measure that we've been able to find, everything that's confirmed, inferior to the PS4. It does a bunch of things that a lot of people really don't want it to do. It doesn't do a bunch of things that they've kind of hoped we would think it would do. They don't come right out and say it, but you know, they want us to think that it's a DVR. They wanted us to believe that it was actually controlling things more directly.
Yeah, that this will control our cable box.
That this is some kind of mother brain for your entertainment system.
Right.
That's what, and like,
and it's very, said it, you saw the banners that were hanging around
E3. Yes. That's just one. That's all you need.
Oh, that's it. Yeah.
One of these, and all your problems will go away, evidently. Whichever, the problems that don't exist, but those non-existent problems will be solved with this system.
Right, yeah.
And it's just, it's an attitude thing. And I just think they needed to do something else, right? Look, you may not think objectively that they had any great thing that they needed to get done out there, but What you think you want and what your brain knows you want are two different things. And those 90 minutes are 90 minutes where they can tell a story. They need to tell a story. It's got a beginning. It's got an end. You have to get from A to Z. And how you go there, how you pace it, where you take your turns, where you speed up and slow down, it's just like a story. And a really good conference will work if it's managed like a really good stage play.
Whereas they were just like, here's A, here's A again, here's Mother A.
And as a counterpoint to it, their initial reveal, that was actually pretty fantastic. That was actually a really well-orchestrated and well-executed conference. It was a really solid, it was full of lies and bloviating and misdirection and smoke and mirrors, but,
Theater for you.
All good theater is. And it was a really good, solid hour of theater. This thing that they presented on Monday, which needed to be, it needed to be a hit. They needed to knock it out of the park, and they didn't. They just they were cowed by their own problems, I think, and it's exactly what you said. Oh, well, just make it just games, and that will make up for the only thing anybody was upset about. And I don't know what they could have done better. I don't think they could have done much. But it was a mess. Their delivery was wrong. The pacing was wrong. Nothing flowed. I can't tell you what came when and at what point they switched the message from, you know, this thing to that thing or the other.
No, I can't either. I can tell you that after seeing that, it's very obvious with crowd reactions and everything else why they did what they did just days prior, releasing all the information about here's how your DRM is going to work.
Yeah.
Here's how disk sharing is going to work. Here's
and you
all
know,
of this.
That was an indication that maybe they were getting ready to. Maybe they're just that's their set and bump, and they're going to do a spike on Monday. That's what it is. They're putting this out there. They're going to do hard clarification on it, and then they're going to wow us with a bunch of other stuff. Mm-hmm. Instead, they seem to think that was it. That's all that's necessary. We've done two necessary things.
Yeah,
can
yeah,
I go?
That's...
Can I go now? And Don Matrix. Body language and bearing in his interview with Jeff Keighley immediately following the Microsoft conference told everything. And I have got to believe that he was really anxious. He was really, really filled with anxiety, not so much about how his conference would be received, but what was going to happen in another 6 hours.
Right. He's still in that interview. The interview was conducted right after Microsoft's press conference. So before we heard from EA, Ubisoft, regardless, before we heard from Sony, which is the main thing, he still had to sell that system. He still had to, without knowing anything of what Sony was going to do, he still had to make it seem like his was the system of choice. It's very hard to do that now, coming off of, you know, everything that happened. They're trying. They're spin. There's plenty of control going on out there. A lot of it unstructured between the two parties of one side of Microsoft. Again, it's just the way it was before E3. One side of Microsoft saying one thing, the other side getting confused and saying something different. We'll go over that a little bit later. But
he was in a very bad position, and I honestly do think that he knew it was the wrong number, because really everything else there. Look, a game can have a bad showing. Mm-hmm. We all know that. If you've been around this industry, not working in it necessarily, but if you've been paying attention for any amount of time, you know that it is an incredible burden to have something ready to show at E3. It's extraordinarily hard. And everybody, particularly with multi-platform third-party games, is vying to have some element of that game shown on their system. When, now that we've had so much consolidation in the industry, there's only a handful of major publishing houses. So they're going to keep something for themselves as well. It's a tough game for everybody involved. And so when I look at something like Rise, okay, not a thing, man. Does not a thing for me. I like the time period. That's about all that it does for me. But I think we were aware before Monday that it was just a retooled former Kinect title. Right, and I thought that was pretty obvious when they showed the gameplay.
It was,
and even later, other than on Tuesday, we started hearing that the game just wasn't, just based on the few minutes of time people got their hands on with it. It's not. It is very underwhelming.
Yeah,
but whatever. Again, that's my example for a game that you can set aside as just possibly having had a bad showing. I can understand that. I can even understand the whole thing going wrong, but the fundamentals of your lineup being really good, and there were things. I mean, I don't have any consumer interest in Microsoft's console, but I really want to play Quantum Break. I really like Remedy, and I was talking during that whole conference. That was the first thing they did that had any real leverage against me, was that game from that developer, And I wanted to see more of that, more stuff that just, I don't know, that like fed that small fire, that fanned the flames of whatever, just a little bit, just something, and it just wasn't really happening. And it all came down to $4.99.
Yeah.
$500, which I don't think is stratospheric, and I don't think anybody was... I mean, I think it was within the realm of, that's high. but it isn't. You're not pricing your system out of everyone's reach.
Right.
This is next gen. We can expect some advancements. We know you've got an awful lot wrapped up in Kinect. I don't know.
I would say we do a system without the Kinect and have it like cheaper.
You can't do that. Everything that they've said up to this point is that the system is fundamentally dependent on Kinect. This is more about how they've put themselves in a position that's untenable,
mm-hmm.
which is why I wouldn't have said it. I just wouldn't have said it. I would not have said those words. I would not have given the internet that number.
Because once you put that out there, you now have, you drew first. And so, it was then Sony's opportunity to.
Yeah, Sony had 7 hours to line up their shot.
Exactly, and I'm sure everyone realizes this, but I put it to you that every single one of them have plan A through probably Z of here's where we're going to go in the event that they do this on either side. And I will tell you now that I'm sure Microsoft has those plans still set in place of. We're going to announce our price. If Sony comes in lower, what are our options to do now to make ours?
I would submit that those options probably aren't as... that the list of options is not as long as people would think. These guys are running... They're not just running business. They're running huge business. They're running earth-shattering businesses. The amount of money generated by the gaming industry is phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
They can't... To suggest that somebody can just say, oh, we'll come out like next week and slash the price. Like that may be an option, but they can't be cavalier. They had to have run the numbers all the way down the line and known which other tracks are mm-hmm. viable. These guys are very, very committed. Sony didn't cut their price after they heard Microsoft's.
Yeah.
They didn't do that. These guys are playing for big stakes. And I'm sure that there are alternatives that could have been dealt with. But, you know, to hear a lot of the guys out of Sony say it, they were committed to this. And they were really, really, really very, very nervous going into watching Microsoft's announcement. And they were very, very happy coming out of it.
I wonder what would happen if, like, Sony would have gone first and, like, you know, then they would have put out their price tag and then, like, what Microsoft's reaction would have been to that. Like, oh, man, we're $100 more.
I don't believe there is anything that they could have done about it, except perhaps not announce it.
Yeah.
Change it? I don't think so.
Yeah, that would have been their two options on that one. If Sony goes first and undercuts us, then we don't announce a price. If they do and they match it, or they beat, or they go over us, then we announce a price.
Yeah.
That was probably their two options in that regard.
And it was a huge mistake, because that number is enormous.
No.
$499 is a huge number. And they probably think it's a bargain. They probably think it's an absolute bargain. Or they thought it was a bargain. I don't know.
Well, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we will hit up the Sony side of things that came out of E3 with their press conference. We've got more coming up next here on In-Game Chat. See what you're doing over there. You're like,
which one?
Which one is it?
Yeah.
Nine.
Is that nine? I couldn't decide if it was seven or nine.
That is, and it comes from Dennis, by the way. That's Final Fantasy IX. He sent that in to us, so.
Best Final Fantasy
Thanks,
soundtrack.
Dennis.
Without a doubt.
God, he was so happy at the Sony press conference. I know he was. I tried to find his tweet specific when they announced Kingdom Hearts 3, because I was like, I know he is going to be in tears for that game. But yeah, so anyway, welcome back to In-Game Chat. We're talking E3 and we're talking the Sony side of things. It was a few hours after Microsoft's reveal. You had EA and Ubisoft in between those two, and then it was time for Sony.
Which I thought were equally messy conferences. EA, for reasons we've already stated, they had a couple of things worth showing. And Ubisoft, as it would turn out, a lot of what I expected to see at their conference showed up in the Sony conference.
The gameplay of what you expected
to see. That's exactly what I'm saying. Here's the thing. I believe that in every way that Microsoft went wrong in their conference, Sony went right. Sony had a full or very nearly full 2 hours, right? I mean, I don't think it ran quite fully too, but I believe they had allotted themselves a lot more time. They were much more flexible because they weren't on television. They were the only one that was not broadcast. They were broadcast only. They were streamed on the
internet.
That's
true.
They weren't broadcast.
I forgot that they had those TV time limits on there.
Didn't they start like about 12 minutes late or so?
They started a bit late. But again, it doesn't really matter because they're not backed up against some kind of commercial wall through a broadcaster. They were just streaming online. But I thought that their conference in every way was timed and staged perfectly. I mentioned this the last half hour. I can't tell you when anything happened in the Microsoft conference, but I could almost recite to you step by step what they did mm-hmm. during the Sony conference. It was that well orchestrated.
Yeah.
So it isn't just that they came out with their big hits, right? And they only had, when you get down to it, it was a great conference, but we were all on pins and needles to hear what we knew we had to hear. You got to see the box. Okay, mm-hmm. They got that out of the way. It took them a minute, but...
Well, I was going to say, you say how great Sony was over Microsoft. As far as the presentation was concerned, and Sony had so much more to say than Microsoft did.
Yeah.
You know, they had to get the box out of the way, the design, and honestly, they breezed through that pretty quick, actually. Yeah.
They realized it actually never was that important.
It never
you
was.
Learn a little bit. They show you all of the pictures. Within minutes, you've got high-res photography on the internet, so you can count the ports, right? Which is the first thing we did. Show me a picture of the back so I can see what kind of interfaces and ports it has. Surprisingly few.
I specifically took a shot of that on the walls.
Right.
I got to get the back.
That's a big deal.
Yep.
You show it, and then you just move on.
And then you move on. It's fine. There will be plenty of time to do that. There is not plenty of time to talk about these things in context.
Right, yeah.
And they, to begin with, I know that I bagged on Microsoft a little for paying too much attention to the 360. But again, I feel like they had less time and more that they needed to say. So I thought Sony's time that they spent on the PS3 was maybe, I'm not here for this. Except, of course, that I'm kind of shocked by what a strong lineup the PS3 has in its last year of being their flagship console.
It's pretty impressive, isn't it?
Yeah. And to the point where for a couple of days I kept forgetting that GT6 and Beyond Two Souls were not PS4 games.
Mm-hmm.
In my head, I kept lumping them into the PlayStation's exclusive
category. Those are current-gen games now, you can say. Those are current-gen.
Yeah, yeah. And
or if you could say those are last-gen games, after November.
But watching their progression, it's so fine. You pay a little bit of attention to the PS3. You mentioned that it's still got some excellent games coming out, which is absolutely true. Then you announce, what the PS4 looks like. Here you go. The first moment I knew they had it together, and I mean absolutely together, and this was something that made me embarrassed for Microsoft and for all of the people who... All of the people who aren't Don Matrick, all of the people who we can't just put a black hat on. There are real people who are making these games and who are trying to put their best foot forward and don't necessarily have the control they need, and their game may be not ready to be shown to so many people, mm-hmm. and they're rushed and they're not in their element, whatever. But some of their presentations, moment by moment during the PS3 or PS4 part of the conference, I began to feel so bad for them. Because the further along we got with Sony, the worse everything about what Microsoft had done looked in retrospect. And this isn't going to matter for a lot of people. It's going to be a turning point in the future. But that moment when they started talking independent developers.
Right, when they brought up the independent developer parade.
Yeah, and they killed it. Look, I've said a lot of, in the long past, I was not a fan of this modern indie movement at all. I just didn't like what was being produced out of it. I mostly wasn't a fan of the games the indie movement looked set to make. But it has evolved an awful lot, and I've had to change my opinion an awful lot. And something that I want to be clear about is that the current state of what the PC is as a really open, really competitive, really innovative platform, right now, is due not to the benevolence and the influence of the big-moneyed publishers. It's due to the little guy and the fact that the little guy is empowered to do whatever he wants. He can go where he wants, compete how he wants, release on as many platforms as he can do business with. It's a really good arrangement, and it has created an exceptional environment for people who play games on the PC. An unparalleled environment. It's ridiculous. It's an embarrassment of riches, and it's largely due to what a good job the indies have done in the last several years on PC. And I'm telling you, if you give them the ability, they'll do the same thing for the people who only play console games. They will. It's not going to be the same environment, but the things they will produce, the things that whole movement can do, the free-to-plays and the independent developers and the space where they cross over, if you do good works with them, they will carry you a very long way. And Microsoft, what did they do? They had a couple of things to show, one of which was Minecraft, and it's like, you know, okay, like, okay.
I couldn't believe when they were showing that. Yeah. I was just...
And it's just...
Really?
Yeah. But the way Sony handled it was, it was so deft, and it was with such confidence and real, real pride. Not just because they weren't just being magnanimous. They were happy, and I could tell by how well they did their thing, and they just had stage right, stage left, stage right, stage left, stage right, stage left, indie, 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 and they had the developers out there playing their games. They gave each one of them their due, and it was a really, really good example of what they are doing to try to get behind the independent movement and to help it be something good that they can all benefit from. And if you combine that with what we know about their pub funding, in addition to them allowing you to completely self-publish it, they've tilled really fertile ground here. It's looking very good. And I loved their little indie print, and the best moment being
when Lorne Lanning
appeared on stage.
That was fantastic.
It was brilliant.
Explain that like you explained it to me, because some people don't know why that's... Why is that brilliant?
Lorne Lanning, which one was it? Which Abe's? It was
Munch's Odyssey.
Munch's Odyssey. He was money-hatted to bring his company. He literally is the character at the heart of the Money Hat. Money Hat idiom.
Yeah.
Penny Arcade wrote that comic about him bringing his game over to the
Munch's
original.
Munch's Odyssey was an original Xbox launch title.
Before that, it wasn't. Before that, it would have been a PC title, just like the two previous games, or probably a PlayStation title as well, because those were on the PlayStation. Right. And it was the same thing that they did with Bungie, right? A lot of us...
From Apple.
Right, but they were their own... They were their own people. We expected Macintosh and Windows versions of the original Halo, and Microsoft was out there spending huge amounts of money to get exclusive first-party, second-party studios, and he was one of them. And he was kind of embattled for a really long time over that.
Because not only did he take a ton of money to close his game up on the single platform, but after the game's release, he then fired every single person that worked for him on the game and kept all the money and didn't have to pay any royalties out for it.
It was a really nasty arrangement, and it was something that left a bad taste in the mouths of people who were around long before the Xbox. So to see him revitalizing... Abe's Odyssey on stage with Sony under the circumstances where it was as a self-publishing or probably a pub funded, I don't actually know what he's doing with that game, revision of that game on Sony's very open, very kind of little free indie republic thing that they've got going on. And I tell you, we have to go back and find a piece of footage, because the look on his face was priceless. It was a quarter second long, but it spoke to 14 years of weird adversity for that guy. It was fantastic, and it was really great, and it told me everything I needed to know about where Sony was as a company right now. And it was really well orchestrated. And to see, you know, a lot of people on Twitter that I follow, who like Total Biscuit, who has an extraordinary devotion to the notion of independent development, to see them start caring about how a console thing was working in a particular way because of that.
Yeah, you bring
him
up.
Really, really interesting.
You bring up Total Biscuit. I saw a tweet just before we came on the air of him saying that apparently all the demos running for the Sony presentation and on the show floor were on PS4 dev units, mm-hmm. whereas the 360, not the 360 anymore, the Xbox Ones were running on high-end PCs.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of conflicting stuff about that, but I can kind of believe that, I guess. Based on some of the other things that we've learned after the fact, that Sony is probably in much better shape where some of those things are concerned. But
anyway, back to the conference.
Yeah, I know that the majority of the games that they showed, and this again, this tells me how committed they were to telling the right story, to showing us the right things, to highlight their system. Much of what they showed, they weren't Sony exclusives at all. They were showing gameplay of multi-platform titles. Their exclusives lineup isn't that great. But the first gameplay demo of Destiny, like, we knew that that was going to happen. But that wasn't the only thing. We had gameplay of Assassin's Creed 4.
And Watch Dogs.
Gameplay that we had not seen before. And And my interest in Watch Dogs had gone down a little bit. I'm still completely committed to playing it, but just felt like I hadn't seen anything particularly good. All we got out of Ubisoft's conference was that leaked CG trailer. No gameplay, nothing new, just some CG. But then we got actual legitimate gameplay out of Sony. I thought that was terrific. And they really, really held that line of just showing gameplay. Even the things that they announced, that those really extraordinary announcements, the Kingdom Hearts, the resurgence of the Versus 13, and then the renaming to 15, right? Even both of those things contained something that probably was gameplay, certainly in engine. They didn't mess around an awful lot at that conference. They really, really were showing an awful lot of games. But again, that didn't really matter, did it?
Not when it came to the end of towards the end of the conference. I know they didn't necessarily, it was interesting how they did wrap it up. You're talking about story and everything. They didn't end the conference on price or on DRM scheme. They ended the conference on cloud, the cloud functionality in Gakai and stuff like that. That just isn't ready yet, but they ended on that, which was an odd way, I think, to end. I would think you would end on that punch of the price and that kick of the DRM and everything that was counter. It's like they had a section mapped out on the script of how this is going to play, the counter Microsoft section of the portion, which is where we're going to talk about our DRM issues. And we're just going to say, we're not going to say anything else other than whatever Microsoft has said. We're going to say we can do this. You can share your games. You do not need to connect once every 24 hours. You can play offline. So everything...
No, really, everything you want out of a console, that's what we're going to give you.
We're not going
to admit that we've been heavily investing in the notion of the same kind of DRM that Microsoft is, and we probably never will. But no, none of this.
There was a lot of people that came away and said, I'm glad it got the applause it did. I just hate that we're actually having to applaud things that are already...
But I don't. You're not applauding the status quo. You're applauding someone making a deliberate decision to provide you with what you... Look, if they thought they could get away with it, they would all be doing this. They pay attention. All of these companies pay attention to everything. How they react to it and how they present themselves to us may differ. But they all pay attention. And they made a deliberate decision to develop or to release the PS4 along these lines. They are not inherently good. They are not inherently better than Microsoft.
We've heard through people who have relationships with the executives that in meetings where they were discussing this issue of DRM, that people were paying attention to the Twitter hashtags after the Microsoft.
Right, the PS4 reveal. No DRM.
Yeah. And they're like, you need to look at this. This is trending right now.
Yeah. That stuff actually did come up. Did it change everything on its own? No. But was it yet another piece of pressure, yet another indicator that, like, no, this is where you want to be. This is definitely where you want to be. We need to reinforce the relationship to the customer and the relationship to the developer. And I firmly believe they were heading that way anyway. Because their PS4 announcement was so pro-developer.
And this makes that announcement seem that much more, I mean, more relevant. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of people were like, man, that the PS4 announcement is just kind of boring. And, you know, you were
it
saying...
It wasn't to me. Yeah, I was completely
you
excited.
You were saying, oh, well, this makes sense because yeah. they're trying to make up for the PS3 and how hard it was to develop for. And now... looking at the two announcements, the original PS4 release announcement, and this one, it makes sense. It's a continuing trend,
right?
And so, I totally.
This was completely the sequel to that announcement,
and in the right way,
and in absolutely every way. I got to tell you, I can't imagine how Jack Tretton managed to, how he kept a straight face.
Well, when he was talking about all the, hey, we don't have any DRM, you can play your game, blah, 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 you can trade them with your friends, he had a smirk on his face.
Yeah.
Oh, he sense in retrospect. He wasn't smirking about what he was saying at that moment. He was smirking because, you're all applauding
told you the price
this,
yet.
But wait till I tell you the price.
Like, you're going to love what I'm telling you now. We as a company are comfortable with this. We know this is what you want. We know that we're in the right place. We are going to be favored very well after this, but I've got you. Like I've already I've won you, and in another 28 minutes I get to say $3.99.
Yeah, you haven't even found out that this donut has cream filling.
Yeah,
in it, you know?
That was something that Michael Pachter said, and in some of his conversations with the executives, they said, you predicted. Michael Pachter's a video game analyst. You predicted that the one would be $3.99, and we were all really, really nervous that you were right, because we had already decided we couldn't go any lower than $3.99, and we needed to beat them on price. We needed to beat them on price very badly. So during the Xbox card, when they announced $4.99, they were reportedly hooting and hollering, because they knew at that point they had won E3.
Now, it was during all of this that they revealed that PS Plus will now be the entry.
I have never, ever seen a piece of bad news developed or delivered more slickly.
Oh,
most, because I'm pretty because they laid it right in, they had already given us a ton of good news, and they just sort of slipped it right in, and there was no problem. There was a lot of wait a minute, can you go back? Did you really just say that?
Right. I took a picture of it because I was like, I need to look, because I didn't want that slide to go away so fast. I wanted to look at that later to see exactly what, because the way he worded it and it was done so fast, and he did not go back to it, but the way it was worded, I thought, did he mean MMOs are going to be behind
it? Because
he said
nothing but questions.
It was like
about
the massively fun of multiplayer games or whatever it was. Well, is something that PS Plus gives you, but come to find out later that your multiplayer time on the PS4 will now be behind a $50 price tag, which is still cheaper than what that is.
The cheaper
for Microsoft.
Doesn't even matter. What matters is that the very next day, the next morning, when he sits down with Jeff Keighley and is put to the test on that question, he doesn't dissemble, he doesn't deflect, he doesn't play stupid, he doesn't say, I'll get you answers later. He says, absolutely. You want to play multiplayer online? You're going to have PS Plus. However, I think it's worth it. I think it's a really good thing. We're trying to really bolster the online aspect of the PS4 because we learn lessons from the PS3. And you're going to pay something that's a little less than $5 a month. That's just what it is. It was, there you go, man. And everybody just combined that with the fact that, unlike Live Gold, PlayStation Plus started out from kind of a value add service, and then grew into an enormous value add.
Oh my God!
Full
huge.
Of nothing but free games and a lot of other, cloud based services and interactions and things that people really, really like and have thought forever is a magnificent service. And then they attach it, as the paywall for online multiplayer. And the way they handled it was correct. And what it is, kind of started from a place of customer service. So people just said, okay.
Because Microsoft's been doing it for so long, why not?
Right. Well, Microsoft started Gold without a whole lot of value add and started from a place of gating multiplayer. And, and there's the additional fact that he was also really clear that this is just for multiplayer. None of your multimedia stuff is going to be behind this paywall.
Right.
And Microsoft is absolutely sticking to that. You want
to
watch
Netflix.
You
want to
watch Netflix on the 360, you're going to be paying for Gold. You want to watch Netflix on the PS4? Whatever, it's fine. It's your Netflix.
So yeah, as long as you don't want to do multiplayer, you don't have to throw in the money.
Lavos makes a point that Gold did reveal that, you know, you've got that they're starting to give you 2 free games a month or something.
But what a miserable announcement that was. Halo 3?
Could they have found oldier, smellier, like anything they'd had to blow more dust off of?
Yeah.
Halo 3 is 4 Halos ago.
He seemed so pleased with himself, Don Matrick, when he announced
that. Assassin's Creed 2 is 4 Assassin's Creeds ago.
Yeah. You own Halo 4. It's had a desperate and flagging online...
You gave it too much. Halo 3.
No. What I'm saying is you own Halo 4.
I see.
It's had desperate online multiplayer problems. The community is flagging terribly. You own it. It's 7 months old now. Give it away.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, I would have started thinking, okay, maybe you're making the right decisions. But your own property, your own ancient artifact of a video game is so precious to you that you just reach back into the file. You can buy a used copy of Halo 3 for... I mean, do they even accept money for that anymore? I mean, I'm serious. It made no sense whatsoever. Sony absolutely has them on that. They could have competed with that.
Surprised it wasn't Oblivion.
Here's our Oblivion and Cameo. Here are our two.
That'll be August.
Right.
Get them for free.
Perfect Dark Zero.
Well, anyway, we've got to take a break. When we come back, it's the second hour of In-Game Chat. We're going to hit up the press conferences in between Microsoft and Sony and whatever it was that Nintendo did on Tuesday. We'll have more of that all coming up next. More In-Game Chat. We'll be right back. And welcome back to In-Game Chat, music from the very first Bioshock. We're in the middle of talking about E3, and right now the segment is going to cover... we'll start with Nintendo, but EA and Ubisoft also had press conferences, and we've kind of touched on their press conferences a little bit when talking about Microsoft and Sony. It just all encompassed that one day. But Nintendo did something on Tuesday... I thought they were really just staying away from doing anything at E3 other than what they were going to do on the show floor. But apparently they did have a somewhat kind of like a press conference at a question and answer period at their booth for invited press, of which I was not involved with that. Other than that, they did their Nintendo Direct, which is not really a stream feed. I guess it's a pre-recorded. That wasn't live. That wasn't live.
No, it was pre-recorded, I believe.
Yeah, it's like a pre-recorded video just to kind of show their stuff, basically, for E3. I did not watch that. I still haven't watched that.
That's bad of you. You should do that. You didn't even wake. You weren't even awake when
it
was happening.
No, I wasn't awake when that happened. No, it really wasn't.
I mean, and again, I think that's possibly... I think that was a mistake, clearly. They held it too early in the morning.
What time was it?
It was like 7 o'clock Pacific.
Really?
Yeah. It was 9 o'clock. Yeah, it was 9 o'clock hour time, so it would have been 7 o'clock.
Wow.
Pacific.
Yeah, that's early. That is really early. They don't even when they were doing their press conferences, it was usually 9 o'clock Pacific when they would do those. Check-in was like 7:30 for that thing, but 7 o'clock to start that? Wow. That is early. But anyway, you guys watched it. So discuss.
I want to try to be fair to them as a company, but I don't own a Wii U. Maybe someday later, under some strange circumstance, I will have one, but they have done nothing to make... They seem content to simply make their console for people who are Nintendo fans. And we have been in the past, but we also tried, the lot of us here, for the most part, RJ's not necessarily like this, but I will buy whatever acts as a conduit to get me to the best games, you know, to the best good time I can possibly have. And I have not had that experience on a Nintendo machine for a while, and Nintendo doesn't particularly seem interested in convincing me that they really don't seem to want my business. They seem to want to do business with people who just like them for what they are, you know, who like adorable executives and... you know, cute titles that are, to be fair, some of the things that are more likely to be trying to find new types of gameplay, right? Mm. I mean, Nintendo titles are cute and weird at some points, but they do things that are trying to find better... they still provide a lot of multiplayer good time for a bunch of people on a single couch in one living room on one TV, which is something that's almost disappeared from what everybody else has to offer. And they don't seem really afraid to take weird little gameplay chances and try to find a cute new way of making a game work. But that's fine. But I don't know. Going into it, I was convinced that it was sort of silly to think that Wind Waker HD was a killer app for them. Coming out of their Nintendo Direct conference, I was pretty sure that they thought it was a killer app for them. And that's about all there was to it. I mean, they had Bayonetta, right? So, I mean, yeah, now you have to buy a Wii U.
No.
How is that
I've never been able to justify buying a console for one game.
How many games would it take, by the way?
At least three.
Okay, at like three things that you're very serious about.
Yeah, because it's big money going into another console, to me anyway.
Yeah.
You know, X amount of hundreds of dollars going into this thing as the initial investment, and then you got to get the games after that. But outside of that, I mean, I was really interested in seeing that, and I'm trying to figure out why Platinum Games only let that come out on that system. I mean, I don't see why it couldn't come out on any of the others. I mean, the way, way I figure it now, I'll just have to wait for a PC release unless I see something significant on the Wii U that I'd purchase it for. I haven't seen anything like that, though. Just that game.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting. You may see that down the line. I really don't know how much of an exclusive that is. I know that during all the E3 stuff, it was announced that director's cut version of Deus Ex was not going to be specific to the Wii, whereas previous it had been.
We thought it had been.
We thought it was going to be. So there is possibly a chance, but I really don't know. Or that maybe they're working on something else for multi-platform later on for Bayonetta. I don't know. But it takes three. So it takes about three games for you.
So, yeah, it takes at least about three or four titles to get me interested in a system to buy it. But one just won't cut it.
Fair enough. I completely agree with you. For that, I mean, I don't own a Wii U. I owned a Wii, and I still don't own a Wii U. And I have a 3DS.
You have a 3DS.
And, I'm, you know, you'll be playing that for Link to the Past.
Yeah, you know, look, I like the idea of their system. I'm not ill at them in any particular way. I'm just not interested in the fact that in terms of their hardware, they've essentially caught up to current gen. And I
now
don't like...
Be, you know, surpassed again.
Right, and I don't... They are just, for me, for most of my tastes, irrelevant. If cost was not an issue, then I would absolutely have one because there are things that I would enjoy playing on that system, and I would enjoy having that system. But they aren't exactly where I am in terms of selling me their product. So, I don't know. They're in a tough way, right? There are people out there who will defend them to the end. And that's fair. They are not a... You know, they're certainly not evil, right? We may talk about the fact that they don't generate enough first-party titles, and mostly that's because we really like their first-party titles, for the most part. We like all of their first-party characters and games.
Mm-hmm.
They're not evil. And, I mean, at this point, it's really nice to be able to look to somebody like that and say, you know, they're kind of slow, and they're, you know, they're a little simple in a few ways, but they're, you know, they're not our enemy, and,
right,
and we're not being treated like theirs.
They're not doing any of the things that we're talking, that everybody else is talking heavily about on the other two
right, but that's also not enough. Not being evil isn't enough of a reason for
it doesn't earn them my money,
right?
I think that the
Nintendo Direct thing was, they would have been better off doing nothing, you know, just having some small little thing at their booth and talk about some things at their booth. I know that they didn't want to do a full E3 type press conference, but I don't think that the Direct was the right answer.
So Smash Brothers announced at that. I can actually tell you everything that was announced at that by walking around their booth. Mario Kart 8 was announced at that. Super Mario 3D World, I guess, which is on the 3DS, but is now getting a version for the Wii U. Bayonetta 2 and Wind Waker HD and a new Donkey Kong Country, I think, was announced as well for that. So that's what came from Nintendo, and then they had a little press thing after the Nintendo Direct that took place at their booth on the show floor, again, that I was not involved with, but apparently it was a question and answer period or something like that that they may have had. So which is more than what Microsoft had. But Nintendo, as far as the mood on the show floor, Nintendo felt like they were in a bubble. When you walked into theirs, it just felt like, welcome to Nintendo world.
We don't care what's going on to the right and left of us.
Yes.
We are doing what we do, and we don't care. And that actually is their...
Yeah, how long have they been that way?
But that is also their official position. We officially don't care what the other two guys are doing. And, yeah, I'm glad, because I don't think you're up to competing with them. So, good for you, I suppose.
Yeah. Over to EA's side of the things, they had their press conference right after Microsoft's, and we talked a little bit about what they showed off there. They had the Plants vs. Zombies, they had a new Need for Speed, and they also had Battlefield 64 players up on stage.
The Battlefront promo.
The 25-second Battlefront promo title screen, and that
really
was,
really only about 8 seconds of a counter.
Probably, yes. Yeah, exactly.
Because it wasn't until the speeder and the AT-AT foot that it actually mattered what they were doing.
Yeah. And then they went into their sports section, as they often do. It was very interesting out of Microsoft and EA, buzzword aplenty, man. You had Drivatar.
Oh my God. That was,
yes.
I was embarrassed for them. I felt so bad that somebody had to keep saying the word Drivatar.
Bounce Tech.
There was Drivatar, Bounce Tech. There was some other stuff for the soccer thing. I don't know what it was, but the way you could pass the ball, I guess. I don't know what it. But yeah, everybody had their buzzwords for their new tech. And I'm glad.
Drivatar, man.
Yeah, Drivatar.
Revolution.
Are you kidding me? Did a group of grown men sit in a room and decide that that was a word they wanted to get behind? Right? They didn't just say it once. They didn't just, like, write it on the screen. Like, these gentlemen agreed and probably shook hands and did some very official things on paper that, like, this is totally a word that we are behind. We believe in the power of this word. Drivatar?
Drivatar.
Come on.
Essentially plays the game for you.
Well, yeah.
Because that's what you want in a video game.
Which is still somehow less stupid than the word for the thing playing the game for you.
Anyway, EA closed with Mirror's Edge 2, which all the rumors were that Microsoft was going to have their little Mirror's Edge 2 tease, but when we didn't get it, I thought, we got one more shot at this, and it was at EA's, and we got the announcement. I really just wanted the acknowledgement that this is being worked on, and that's
again, that's all they did with Battlefront. Mm-hmm. Yes, mm-hmm. This exists. We're moving on, and I would like to point out, yes, I know we're seeing a little bit of feedback from the chat room that it's Hoth once again. I understand we've all played through Hoth.
I've never played that before.
Right, okay, but there's a rule. Every Star Wars game, like eventually, any arc, any game, any little slice or spur of the fiction has to go to Hoth. It's like it is just some kind of rule. Second, I think that we can at least maybe hope that, well, I mean, it was a traditional snowspeeder and an AT-AT foot, right?
Yes.
So maybe that is some indication that they're going classic Star Wars for the focus of this. That's probably reaching a bit much. It's probably just the recognizability of that situation. So setting aside that, yes, there will be Hoth, I think it's nice to see that it's, you know, it's very old school devices and mechanisms or whatever. In that trailer, I'm just looking for a sliver of light,
right? Out of the 8 seconds that
right.
we had to see,
but it exists, and that's all that matters. All I really needed was the same thing from Mirror's Edge 2.
Mm-hmm.
It exists and is evidently a prequel. Of some
again,
sort.
If you go on the 8 seconds,
unless they were taking those tattoos off of her, I'm pretty sure it's some kind of backstory or prequel or something.
Yeah, but like you, I just needed acknowledgement. And, I mean, we had gotten some acknowledgement that EA will be working on Star Wars games, but, you know, the whole thing of what's going on with Mirror's Edge 2, are we getting that or are we not? And now we know that eventually, at some point, when it's ready, we will get it. So
that's all I needed to know. The Battlefront footage, you know, when you're going to show Battlefront...
Man, you can't let go of that, can you? You just want to... Battlefront... 8 seconds, Matt. No, I know it's Star Wars.
Battlefield, but, sorry.
Oh, you were talking
see,
Battlefield.
Even your
Battlefield.
Brain will not let you move beyond the deep rut. you've dug with your own fandom.
I know, but no, the Battlefield footage, you know, they're showing the single player game, you know, like when they first showed it. You know, like, oh, here we are on the boat, and, you know, and everything.
Oh,
like,
we're on an Xbox side of things? Yeah, when Xbox showed it off, they showed single player, but EA was showing the multiplayer.
There might actually be somebody who cares about Battlefield single player.
I mean,
I don't know where
it, but
I won't. I still haven't played threes. It's terrible. Okay, it's terrible. It shouldn't be there. It serves one purpose, multiplayer. That's the only thing it ever did. Right, it isn't that it was both things and the multiplayer was simply better, like Call of Duty, right? Because that was the case over there. Remember when the first Call of Duty, the World War II Call of Duty came out, it was a perfect balance between a really fun campaign and really, really cool multiplayer.
Yeah.
And over time, it's grown more and more in the direction that the multiplayer is really what that series is about. But, you know, it has single player roots, and so that's important. This is just not the case with Battlefield. Not at all. It doesn't need single player.
The thing I'm trying to think about Battlefield is the only real single player for Battlefield that I could really remember is those two games that they
Bad Company.
Bad Company.
Yeah, Bad Company was pretty great. Actually.
Yeah, but I mean the other ones, the 1942, the Battlefield 2. None of those had single player elements.
That was that point I just spent a minute making.
But. Does 3 have a single
player? Yes, remember when they announced it and we're talking about it, it was nothing but the single player campaign. And we were all begging for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks for some sliver of information about the multiplayer because it's the only thing anyone cared about.
So I never picked up 3, so.
Oh, well, it was great. In multiplayer.
Well, immediately after EA, you had Ubisoft's press conference. Ubisoft's. It was interesting. Somebody made the point in the chat room here, and I'm realizing that as well. They had a couple of counters to EA's reveal, which is usually you don't really see stuff like that. But EA has a multiplayer aspect racing title. And Ubisoft came up with a multiplayer aspect racing title.
Which looked neat.
I know.
It looked really neat, yeah? I was trying to imagine how you were reacting to that, wherever it was that you were. I felt very sorry for you that you were not at Ubisoft's conference.
No, I got back to the hotel and fired up the worthless internet they had there and watched the blurriest of blurred streams of their press conference. And
so you missed out on the money drop?
I don't even know what that is. Yes, I guess
I did. At the end of Ubisoft, they were showing The Division. And
I remember. See, it didn't even stick with me that happened afterwards. Division stuck with me,
yes,
but his little thing at the end did not stick with me. But yes, Division, you know, Division and the Crew were their two big things that they announced. They showed trailers of AC4 and Watch Dogs, but there was just trailers, just CG stuff, no gameplay. But they showed gameplay of the Division and gameplay of the Crew, and there was a lot said about that. I remember getting on the bus going to Sony, and I thought, man, regardless of whatever they may show, if Ubisoft makes a tradition of revealing a new IP every single E3, that's a good. It's a good thing that they do that. I don't know. What did you guys? The Crew. I'm just a sucker for arcade racers. So
I'm not right. It's been a long time since I really played a racing game, let alone got excited about one. But man, the Crew looked like something that I would have fun with.
It reminded me of Midtown Madness.
Yeah, I'll let you get away with that. I think that's fair enough. Right,
a lot of this E3 reminded me of like the 90s, and we mentioned
there were a lot of humorous moments that reminded me of some of the worst parts of the 90s.
Yeah,
but I can see a little bit of that. I'll let you have a little bit of reminded you of Midtown Madness, mostly because I know that for like 12 years now you've desperately wanted something to remind you of Midtown Madness, and that's okay because that game was fantastic.
And we had a lot of fun playing it.
Right, and I suppose that's fair to suggest that the sort of multiplayer race about kind of thing could be great. It didn't do anything to me personally. I was sort of, I was disinterested.
For most of that press conference, I was disinterested.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that the game looked bad. I wasn't saying that it was objectively a problem. It just didn't connect with me personally. But, and I have simpler tastes, you know, as far as video games. I am apparently immune to getting sick from first-person shooters, third-person shooters, cover-based shooters, chest-high cover walls. I don't care. Like, I really don't care. I don't even look at them as a type of game. I just look
unless your field of view is too small.
Unless, yes, which is a sin.
But I'm digressing.
Yeah. I actually... That's literal sick. Sure. But I don't mind those things. To me, I'm just like, okay, this is just another way to put me in a different story in a different location. I just don't care. I don't mind. So if you give me one that looks really good and has some fun elements bolted onto it in other ways, you know, like The Division,
mm-hmm.
Man, I'm sold. I'm absolutely sold. That game looked killer.
That's where I was going
fantastic.
Next was how you...
I like how it's a Tom Clancy game, so it could, you know, theoretically be set in his universe, you know, that he has set up with, you know, the ghosts and Rainbow.
Oh, with other continuity.
With the other continuity. So, I mean, that could tie in with, you know, that whole, the Clancyverse that...
The Clancyverse is kind of out in space now, though. I mean, it's gotten pretty ridiculous ever since he relinquished control and just sold his name to them. It's oddball, but that's okay. Like, I don't mind that it's oddball.
I think the problem with it, they went too much in the future tech and stuff. This feels like it's not quite as futuristically, you know, set as...
Yeah.
You know...
It's a little more grounded.
Yes.
In terms of its interactions, I think.
Less gadgets and more... Yeah.
Dystopia.
No, I understand what you're saying.
There was some gadgety stuff going on.
There was, yeah. Well, you're right. I forgot about that whole overlay of the map and everything. Oh, that's right.
But it was much more subtle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it seemed very, very subtle. I really want to believe. That's the game that I will lie to myself about the most out of this E3. I will not think too critically about it. I will simply...
What was the game that you lied to yourself about the most last E3? Watch Dogs?
No, I...
Okay.
You know, I don't...
I thought it might have been...
I didn't think I had to. Mm-hmm. I thought that they had presented things fairly well. Really quickly, we had found, you know, I guess it might be, because watching different replays of the same section, you begin to see that it's not, this isn't really happening on its own. This is all designed to happen this way, and no matter how many times I do it, it's going to happen exactly this way. But I want to believe that I'm going to love it anyhow. So, and I mostly still think I will.
Yeah,
so.
No, I'm still on board. I'm still on board for it. PS4 or PC, whichever way, but you know, we talked about that. Let's see. Yeah, time for a break. Yeah, we're gonna take a break. We've got one more segment to go over here. We're gonna go over, I don't know, a couple of different things. The pre-orders and my rush to get you on the phone to
right.
go.
Well, the pre-orders are their own interesting story, actually.
They are. And some time on the show floor, the mood of the booths, or at least Sony's and Microsoft's, got some time with the controller, the new DualShock 4. To talk about that. Just more E3 talk coming up next on In Game Chat. We'll be right back. And welcome back to In Game Chat.
Rainbow Six.
Yes, but the very first one. Yes, that was from the Punch-Out, right?
Yes.
That was Punch-Out, yes. Make sure. Welcome back to In Game Chat, final segment of the show, and just kind of grab a big catch-all of stuff that was going on. I had some time to, very little, but I did have some time to mess around with the new controller for... it's not really new. The improved controller for the Xbox One, I guess you could say.
Is it?
It feels... Well, you know, I have to take that back because I have to think about it. I was going to say it feels lighter, but I forgot that these things are plugged in. There are no batteries in them, so that probably adds some weight to it. But it feels good. I say it's improved... only for the fact that it's newer. I guess there's not much...
Well, don't let... No, let's... Those things aren't always the
same
thing.
They're not the same.
They're usually not the same.
Yeah, they aren't the same.
It looks okay.
There wasn't much that needed changing on the 360 controller.
See, this is what I'm saying. The 360 controller is an excellent...
Yeah.
Excellent controller. I don't mind that they seem to have reorganized the buttons and triggers a little bit. They've kind of unified all of that. They've given a little more space to the bumper part. And I'll take them at their word that the triggers are as neat as they are. Now, you know, with the
vibration.
Well, yeah, with the vibration in the actual triggers. So it looks I mean, if it's one thing that they've known how to do, I hate to say that, like, this is as proud of them as I could possibly be, but that controller, man, the 360 controller is put together really well. I like it. It's built right. It's laid out correctly. I still have my problems with playing Last of Us right now. You know, it, directly in the wake of seeing all of this stuff, you know, and I'm always worried about my own bias because I have a ton of it. But I sit down and I'm really thinking about the DualShock 3 and how much I hate it. I despise that controller. I can't stand the placement of the analog stalks because my thumbs are always knocking into one another, and I don't like the triggers, and I hate how light it is. I don't like that controller at all. I really, really don't. And I really didn't like the look of the DualShock 4 when I saw it. It looked to me like they were releasing and marketing some prototyped thing that was just even more garbage crammed onto a DualShock 3. However, I have heard an overwhelming amount of feedback from people that have actually had their hands on it, and I'm just going to have to admit that I'm probably wrong in this case, because everyone I've heard from says it is fantastic.
It feels great. It really,
that, like,
really does.
That the triggers...
It's got some weight to it.
The triggers are really, really nice and tight.
Yes.
The analog stalks are now concave instead of convex, and they have a nice lip around the edge that feels really good. The controller itself looks to be wider, which means I can probably position my thumbs the way I want, you know, with the knuckle over the top of it instead of the tips of my thumbs.
Yeah.
Even the touchpad, everybody said, and that was a huge question, right? You put a touchpad on a controller? Are you mad? Are you crazy?
It works.
But everybody says it works fantastic.
It works. Yeah, it really works. Your thumb has ease of access to that touchpad. Either thumb has access to the entire surface of
that
touchpad.
I watched a lot of videos of people using it, and everybody
it's instinctual almost how well it works.
That's really surprising to hear.
And this is like the first major form change of the Sony controller since...
And it's not much of a form change, though.
It's putting a bunch of new features on the existing form.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, like, they really haven't changed their form since the original PS1.
No, they haven't, ever.
Except, like, they added the DualShock, and then...
But they've modified it as they've added features, but they haven't gone back to the drawing board, ever.
Yeah.
So the fact that they still managed to somehow find all the right features, make all the right changes, and cram them all into a controller that, just looking at it, it's not... You know, it doesn't look like much, but, man, it's a tool, and a tool's job isn't to look good, it's to perform well. And if they've built a controller that can perform well, then I'm excited. I don't know if you caught, can't remember if you said you did or not.
I caught the demo of the eye.
Right,
and
that was actually a little surprising, watching that Engadget video. I don't know if you guys have seen it. Jeremy, I think you did.
I saw it.
I was like, stepping back just a bit to the PlayStation reveal, they were very careful to show the new PSI camera with the system every time they were presenting it, you know, just behind the glass. But the camera isn't packed in with the system, which is obviously one of the ways that they were able to keep the price so low. Nobody really had much to say about it, but I watched that video of Engadget playing the little game tech demo thing with the controller, and I don't want to say I was impressed, but I've seen the videos of the Kinect, and I've seen the videos of this thing, and this thing seems just as capable. They're not trying to wow me with a lot of the underlying technology. They just put a guy with a controller in front of a PSI and had him fart around with a fun little game, and it worked, which is all I really ever needed to see from Kinect. Instead, they try to dazzle me with the technology and not actually show me any gameplay. So I thought it was really, really neat. I like that the controller plays an important part in that.
Mm-hmm.
Also like that it doesn't have to.
No, it doesn't. So. It doesn't. But that controller, there's a texture on the bottom of it.
The PS4,
DualShock 4. There's a texture on the bottom of it. It's not rubberized grip or anything like that. But there is a But it does provide a nice grip to...
Is it like an anti-slip texture?
Something like that. It doesn't feel rough or anything like that, but it just fits very well in your hand. It doesn't feel loose or slick. You know, I can take the DS3 and I can pinch it between, you know, my thumb and my finger and just have it fly across the room if I wanted to. But this gives you some grip to it. The triggers, like you said, the triggers have... they're not flimsy. They're not just, you know, they're not real clickable, but they do have a resistance as you get further in. There's not a click when you get to the surface, but they do have that resistance, and it feels like squeezing a trigger does. And then, like I said, the touchpad as well, the thumbs are easily accessible. The touchpad is clickable. Also, there is, and like you said, the thumbsticks are just amazing. And the triggers, let me go back to that. Not just the pressing, but the triggers are triggers.
Yes.
And that's one of the biggest that they could have ever done.
Yeah, I was just about to ask you about the triggers, because the issue I had with the DualShock 3 was how easy my fingers would slip off.
Yep.
Trevor came up with that idea was, it's plugged us for 6 years. You know, it's plugged us since the release.
Yeah, now I bought the aftermarket clip-on triggers for my PS3, and I'm looking at the chat room. Levels talk about the snap-on triggers for the DS3 right. Really help.
They do help. If you get a little too aggressive and excited in an action game, they pop right off.
Well, I did put some... I bought some Gorilla Glue for it. That solved that problem.
Oh, well...
Yeah, don't laugh. It worked.
I know. I know how well Gorilla Glue works, which is why I am laughing.
Lavo says there was no Move stuff at the conference. There wasn't, but on the show floor, apparently they were demoing it for some press outlets as to how the PSI and the I guess your DualShock 4 would
work. Well, and it's and that makes all the difference in the world. Having that having moved the Move globe, you know, the glowing trackable object that made the Move system work so well, moving that onto the controller seems to have been a really good idea, because watching that tech demo, it did connect levels of funny stuff with him waving in the air and knocking a little robot about, the robot setting the one guy's hair on fire and like doing a little like head and shoulder scan of the dude and like showing a skull and spine, mm-hmm. and freezing his head and him having to shake his head and shake it all. Like that was all fun and cute, nothing that the Kinect can't do. But that tracking of that augmented reality display that would like pop up out of the controller was perfect. It was perfect. It looked really, really good. I can't imagine what anybody's necessarily going to do with it, but it was very cool. So that level of thing, and if you go back and listen to our very old shows and we were talking about the Move, that's why I liked it. It is really one-to-one tracking. So that promise is there, but... You know, it isn't something that I'm going to have to suffer through on absolutely every game. So, whatever.
Yeah. Now, what about the pre-orders? Now, I called you.
Man, you were such a baby.
You were
such a little baby child, and you were so angry at me because you called our local store, our local GameStop. We're very, like, you know, you could have gone on Amazon.
I could have, and a lot of people at E3 did.
A ton of people did, but I actually, you and I both really kind of like the... You know, it'll be fun. I like the idea of going to the actual launch of the system. It's something that we all like to some degree or another. And so you wanted to get it at our local GameStop. So, but they wouldn't take a pre-order of the phone.
No, they will not.
So you had to have me go by there. And you, you were very frustrated because I wasn't answering your texts.
Yeah. I was like, are you there? You're drunk, aren't you?
Yeah.
That's why you can't, you're like, I really want to help you out, but I'm too drunk to drive to GameStop. Yeah.
No, it was fine. I was just letting you sweat it out a little bit. I thought about going through it all the way and completely lying to you until you got home, but I didn't.
Because they only had two left.
Now, did he tell you how many they had total?
20?
20?
I want to say 20.
And they only had two left?
Or maybe I'm thinking of the PS... Maybe that's... You told me how many
I told,
the PS4.
Yeah, he was very forthcoming about the PS4 stuff. Yeah. They had 24 total.
So I could be wrong on how many they were getting for the 360. He may not... Or the 360. God, I got to stop that. But the Xbox One, he may not have ever told me a number. I know he told me that they only had two left.
Mm-hmm. Well, the thing that is interesting has been watching how people have responded to these pre-orders and trying to gather as much information as we can, just out of curiosity about how the two are doing. Largely to kind of gauge interest, you know, a little more broadly, you know, in reactions to the console announcements. Like, did it really matter what Sony did? Does it really matter that Microsoft had a bad showing? Does it really matter at all? Are the possible rumors of Microsoft having yield issues with their system, is that really true? Is that going to be reflected? So it was kind of a fascinating thing to watch. But if you put together like a lot of the just word of mouth and anecdotal stories from people out there, the PS4 is kicking the tar out of the 360.
It was after Sony's press conference. I mean, well, it was the only time it could. It couldn't really do it when it wasn't up for pre-order beforehand.
No. But that day doesn't matter.
Yeah.
That it's what's happened in the subsequent days.
Oh, gosh.
Their pre-order numbers seem to be huge.
Gigantic.
And the Xbox's numbers don't seem... I mean, they're objectively huge, but subjectively nowhere near, it seems, what the PS4 is doing.
Either that night after the press conference or the next night or whatever, I was sitting at the hotel room, and I decided to look up, go on Amazon and see the differences and all this other stuff. And I went to Amazon, and they had day one units for Xbox One still available, but the PS4, if you pre-ordered it, said, you know, we guarantee you'll get a PS4. However, the you may not receive it on launch. So they had already hit their total.
What they believe to be their day one supplies.
So, which I think Sony has said that they're going to increase that or try and...
This is what's interesting. If talking, listening to executives from both companies talk about it, I'm sure they have some excellent idea about how many they'll be able to deliver, but they are not in mass production yet. They're not actually doing that quite yet.
Yeah.
So they're not 100% sure of how many they're going to have and on what day they're going to be able to satisfy demand. But you know, it does look like it might be a proper old time, you know, scramble for people that didn't pre-order in the first day.
And let me look to RJ on this. We didn't know a price on Sony's system. We now do know a price. Are you getting a PS4 now, or does it still do the game
get,
still?
I'm much more likely to get a PS4 than a 360. That's for sure. I mean, when I saw when I heard the price was $399, first thing that came to mind was that maybe an introductory, bare bones minimum, you know, type of a system, just to get the bare minimums, get in there, and then some type of a upgrade or bundle would come later. But not seeing that from Microsoft's side. Price is definitely going to be a factor in my case in terms of a next system, and I'm pretty sure there's going to be more coming on the PS4 later on down the line to merit me getting the system more than the Xbox One. So yeah, price is definitely a factor. And $399 is just sounds a heck of a lot better than $499.
Well, they won the Christmas war in that regard. When parents walk into a store and say my kid wants the newest machine, they're going to look at the one and the PS4 and say, and for them they're going to technically do the same thing,
and
the price is going to be cheaper, and so that, you know.
Yeah, and I was saying, isn't it safe to say that the PS4, you said, is a better hardware overall system?
Yeah, it is. There are still a lot of things we don't know, a lot of specifics, but my understanding is that it's essentially impossible for whatever those details are to make the Xbox a more powerful system.
So easy selling price would be the better system, cost less.
Now, you know, I do think that there are a lot of other things that there are other things that factor into that. There really, really are. There are a lot of people who have just been Xbox people. They maybe haven't done enough research to know where first party and third party titles are going, when things are coming out, what exactly the DRM situation is, or maybe they don't care at all, even if they do know. I'm an Xbox guy, and there's a new Xbox coming out, and I'm going to take care of that. So there is some of that brand loyalty. There is also a lot of old brand loyalty for people like us. A lot of people who had a lot of fun and a lot of really good times with Sony systems. And we remember what Sony did for this industry. So to see that they're in a position to be doing all the right things again, that matters. And it makes me much more like all things being equal, price, DRM, exclusive count, it doesn't really matter. If they were all equal, my nostalgia, my fond memories of Sony would probably send me their direction. That alone. And yeah, for a lot of people, price, probably for the majority of people, price is going to matter. I just don't know how much it's going to... Availability is going to have a lot to say about that.
Yeah.
It's, if there is anything for mom and dad to walk into the store and see, I mean, they'll see a price tag. They'll see a waiting list, maybe. I don't know, you know? It's not so much going to be about Christmas, I don't think. Because I'm not sure how they're going to meet demand for Christmas. Maybe they will, maybe they won't. I don't know. But until Microsoft lowers their price, however long that takes, 6 months, a year, I don't really know.
I don't know. You know, one of the questions that Calgar asked in the chat room was that he doesn't think Microsoft is ignorant to the backlash, and he's sure that they want to change it, but can they do that without changing any of their policies? Maybe not. Can they do that by changing their price?
No, they can't. They can... I don't know. But I don't know if they can... I don't know that they can afford to drop their price. They may be in the same situation that Sony was in, where they went as low as they thought they possibly could. I don't know that they're trying to scam people out of extra money just because they think they can.
Mm-hmm.
I think the price drop is the only thing they have control over at this point, if that makes sense. I don't think you change your policies, and I don't think you change your hardware, and I don't think you change your focus at this point. The only control point you have is price. And they would honestly be smart, I think, to wait a respectable amount of time and then, you know, announce a price drop. Announce a price drop as quickly as they reasonably can, I guess. It's all they've got.
Yeah. Well, the mood on the floor, I was talking about Nintendo living in their own little bubble, and that's... I think this is the first time it's happened, but Nintendo, Sony, and Microsoft, their booths were right next to each other. I think it is the first time that I've been going to E3 that all three booths were right next. Sometimes they're in the same hall, just one on this end, you know, one on
sure.
one end and opposite of the other. But never like back to back to back. You could walk straight through each booth, you know, without hitting a wall. You could walk straight through all of them if you wanted to. And it was a very... It was like walking. It's like walking into the different lands at Disney World. They have their own thing. Nintendo again in their own bubble, in their own little Nintendo world, doing their thing and having a blast. And all the different kiosks set up were set up so that people could go and have their picture taken with Donkey Kong or inside a Mario Kart or all these little things. You walk into Sony's and it's very jovial. It's very happy, very party, very just fun type of everything's cool here. Everybody's great, and welcome to PlayStation. Then you walk into Microsoft's. Microsoft felt like a wake. It did. It felt kind of uncomfortable walking around Microsoft's booth. Microsoft had security guards positioned all over the place, suits and ties, little earpieces and everything else. They had their security guards out in force. I didn't recognize a single one in Sony's booth. There were just some people guarding the stairs to go upstairs we could do interviews from. That was about it. But on Microsoft, on the show floor, there were people everywhere who were kind of, you know, watching over things and making sure things were going okay. Mm-hmm.
I think you just described basically all three of their positions during that E3. You know, Nintendo just doing what they do, Sony being happy, and Microsoft just, you know.
And it kind of came through in their booths on the show floor as well. So it was, you know, it was interesting to do that, to walk through that. Now I say that Sony, or not Sony, but Microsoft may have had that because they had that McLaren car sitting out on the show floor. And they had a lot of security around that, but there were other places on the show floor that didn't.
There are always good excuses to have lots of security. If you need a good excuse, there are always reasons for that. But
they were heavy on it.
Let's not pass up the opportunity to just discuss or to recognize that their booth was as funereal as the last several weeks of public sentiment have been. You know, mm-hmm. I hate that for all the people who aren't doing evil things at their company, but .
Well, speaking of good excuses, there's good excuses for if you're a PC gamer to still be excited about all this, even if you have absolutely no intention of getting any of
absolutely.
These systems, because you know, this is the first time when the consoles are going to launch with a similar amount of RAM to what we have in our PCs, and a similar amount of power. And hey, they're finally going to be developing games in a 64-bit environment.
Yeah.
So I think there's really good reason to think we'll start getting 64-bit executables as standard on PC games now. And it's all thanks to things that are happening over here with the launch of these consoles.
If you look at a lot of what was announced at this E3, talking specifically about console games, there was a really strong push for open world things.
Right, right. Like, Metal Gear Solid 5 is an open world
Everything is an open world now because it
There's rumors that Mirror's Edge 2 or prequel or whatever is going to be an open world game.
Yeah, you want to talk about that? And I don't have my notes with me. They're outside. But Witcher 3, when I was getting the demo of that, 32 times bigger.
Yeah.
Then Witcher 2.
These are all the things we were talking about weeks ago. Design decisions that you can't quite see. They carry over to the PC.
Yes, they do.
But you have
if you have any intention at all of releasing that thing on a console, then you have to design it under certain constraints.
Right.
At least previously, you did.
Yeah, reducing the resolution, removing high-end PC effects, reducing the texture size.
Making sure that
these things are not enough.
Making sure everything can fit into the available amount of RAM, which has always been chintzy.
Yeah. And so you can remove effects all you want, but there's still design restrictions for a game that has to be played on something like our current and previous generation consoles. But this is, you know, and maybe open world isn't the greatest way to go for everything. I think it's going to probably turn out to be a mistake for a lot of things, possibly even Metal Gear. But I'm willing to accept that because this is everyone seeing that they no longer have to be constrained by these very, very small system resources that they've had to deal with in the past. So it's cute in a way. It's really fun. We're watching things kind of develop into what we've always wanted them to be.
And as they move towards more digital, they're not even limited by disk space anymore.
Right.
So
the hard disk space.
Yeah, there's
not optical media.
Right, optical media is what I meant on that. I mean, I know that
if you get a PS4, you can go up to pretty much any amount.
Because you can interchange.
Because
the hard drive.
The hard drive is still user serviceable.
They didn't give any specs on the Xbox One hard drive, did they?
I thought they did. I thought that it was a 500.
Is it 500 on them too?
I may be filling in that blank for them, which, by the way, I think is sufficient.
Yeah.
I don't think it's not a lot.
Laptop size drive.
What's that?
Is it still a laptop size?
I believe so. Yeah, I believe it's the exact same technology they've been using for.
Because I was looking into it for the PS3, the biggest I could put in there was a 1 terabyte.
One terabyte drive?
Because the bigger ones are like too big to fit in there.
I see.
I could be wrong about that.
I don't know what the enclosure is. They haven't even really said, but they did confirm that, you can put your own drives in there, which is a huge deal in a story about next-gen console development that has been characterized by more restriction, fewer choices, options disappearing. Just to say that the way that we've become comfortable with dealing with them is going to remain open to us, so we're going to have all the options that we had before, is pretty good. I never expected to have a user serviceable hard drive on a PS4, and that's not a system selling feature, but it's pretty cool.
It really is. And it's there was a lot more that we got out of E3, obviously not enough that we can put in a 2-hour show, but in the months to come we'll have more discussion, we'll have more information on how the family plan works on Microsoft, on how
we will.
So
eventually.
So say they.
Okay.
But, so lots more to discuss on this. Anyway, thanks everybody for joining us in the chat room, as well as everyone listening on the stream and even on their radios as well. Thanks to everybody who grabs us every week from iTunes or however you get our show for later use. We really appreciate it. Don't forget to join us on Twitter, Facebook, and our forums at colonyofgamers.com. If you're on Steam, we've got a Steam group. You can join up there. We give out free games every now and again, so worth joining up and play games with us and other listeners. And also check out our Minecraft server at play.ingamechat.net. So thanks, everybody. We're going to see you next Saturday. Have a good one. We'll see you next week.